I always dreamed about watching my children have grandchildren, you know, have children of their own. And so it wasn't difficult for me to make that decision. Of course, my son wouldn't want to have, his first choice would not be to have children like this. I mean, he would want to raise his children, but the bottom line is he can't. And now I feel like, as the mother to a son that I knew so well, I feel like he would have wanted me to do this. He would believe in this and want me to help him live on as well. And he knows that it would help our family and it would help to heal my heart somewhat.
That's the voice of Marissa Evans. This is a 42-year-old mother, lost her 21-year-old son to tragic, tragic violent death. And in addition to donating his organs to science, she has harvested sperm from his dead body so that she can find a surrogate mother and have a grandchild by her son. And the technology's readily available for this. It can be done. It's quite easy to do it. Should it be done? Colleen Carol Campbell joins us. She's a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Are people right to be concerned about where a story like Marissa Evans' story seems to be headed?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, certainly if you're a childless young man whose mother is desperate for grandchildren, that's it's apparently now one of the many bizarre options your mother may have should something happen to you. But aside from these really bizarre scenarios, we are just seeing more and more of this kind of thing. Just where technology leads us in this question, again, of because it can be done, should it be done, it seems to be increasingly our answer is an automatic yes. There was a story I read about not long ago, I think it was in Britain, where a 72-year-old man was going to become the father to his own grandchild because his son was infertile. His son's wife wanted to have children, so the son's wife was impregnated with the grandfather's sperm. So, I mean, you just try to sort out that family tree and how confused that child is going to be. We're just hearing more and more of these strange stories, and even though these may not be the things that our neighbors are doing or our friends are doing, these are the things that are becoming possible and, unfortunately, I think increasingly accepted.
It's not just a question of medical ethics. It seems, and you point out in a recent column in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, that it's also a question of how we are, as a culture and a society, beginning to view children. Talk about that.
That's right. Well, children have really become, in a sense, a commodity, something you choose or reject even after they're conceived. And you know, it's interesting. People spend whole decades of their lives doing anything to avoid having children, including going to the extreme of killing a child who's already conceived in the womb. And then when the time comes and you want a child, it becomes like the Holy Grail. And so it's a very, you know, a lot of this is natural, of course, our desire to want to have children, our desire to want to see our genes replicated. And of course, it's also natural to want to have children under certain circumstances and more than others. But what I think has become a problem is that we have this burgeoning, unregulated fertility industry in America that has done good things, of course, but also has become so oriented toward adult desires that it's increasingly operating by the rule, if we can do it, we should do it, without a lot of stopping to think, okay, if I were this child, is this a way that I would want to be conceived? Would I, for instance, want to be born into a family where I'm not going to know my natural mother and my natural father is dead and, in fact, was dead before I was even conceived? Is that actually fair to the child? And I think in all of this, it's the child who tends to get lost.
We talked yesterday with Dr. Robert George about gay marriage, and one of the points that he raised was part of the problem with gay marriage is that it will leave many children, as is the case with many children of divorce as well, with no connection to the real biological roots. And he was talking about gay marriage. You also write about this with respect to reproductive technology, leaving children without a connection to real parents.
Well, that's right. And I the topic that I wrote about, especially this week, was donor-conceived children, whose maybe their father, biological father, is a sperm donor, or their biological mother is an egg donor, or in some cases, they were carried in a surrogate womb. And increasingly, we're seeing this is not even married couples, seeking a donor to replace the gametes they can't get from one of the parents, but actually, single women just saying, well, I don't want to wait for Mr. Right. I'll just find a sperm donor. What's the difference? So we're seeing more and more intentionally fatherless families and intentionally motherless families in the case of particularly, gay men couples coming together and using surrogate mothers, but then raising these children. And I think, a lot of times we hear this claim, well, there are adopted kids who don't know their birth parents. There are orphan kids who don't know their birth parents. That's certainly true, but as one author has pointed out, Elizabeth Marquardt is working on a study on this issue. She's hoping to name her book My Daddy's Name is Donor, which is sort of a chilling and maybe shocking title, but she's pointed out that for adopted kids or orphan kids, they don't have to live with the knowledge, as donor-conceived children do, that it's the very parents raising them who purposely created them with a severed relationship to at least one of their biological parents. So I think that makes things even more confusing, because not only are they searching for their biological roots, but they know the reason they can't have that connection is because the parents raising them intentionally conceived them without that connection. So I think it just makes things very painful and confusing often for these children.
There's a certain kind of, just add water aspect to this, that, okay, now we know how babies are made, and now we have the technology to do this. It's kind of like, growing sea monkeys. it's not really children is the product of the marital union between husband and wife, father and mother. Husband and wife become father and mother together in the procreation of children. The whole event of marriage changes at that point. Now it's just, we know what ingredients it takes to create a baby, and all we got to do is find a way to safely combine them.
That's right, and I think increasingly we see children themselves as a right. I have a right to destroy a child if it comes at a time I don't want it, but I also have a right to conceive one, even if I don't want to have any of the trappings that have, for ages past gone with conceiving children. For instance, if you're attracted to people of the same sex and you don't want to marry someone of the opposite sex or even have any relations with someone of the opposite sex, you still demand a child and feel that you have just as much right to a biological child as anyone. And so you're getting more and more of these, we're doing this whole redefining the family. And it makes adults feel good. It solves a lot of longings for the adults, but again, we're just overlooking how is this affecting the actual children. And we already know, we're starting to hear from some of these adult children who were donor-conceived, often raised in intentionally fatherless families, and they're on the internet trying to find their biological fathers. And what's sad is, not only do they rarely find those men, but when they do, often those men have no interest in these dozens and sometimes hundreds of kids looking them up, knocking on their door, wanting a relationship with them. And to these guys, this is a sperm donation I gave back in college. I don't know who you are. And so I think it can be very bewildering. I think kids are born into all sorts of circumstances and very few into into perfect families where there's just no issues at all. But I think this is creating a situation where we know from the outset that they're going to deal with this kind of heartbreak and confusion. And I think that's the difference here. What sometimes maybe just has to happen because, a mother wants to give life to her child but can't raise that child herself. That's a pretty different scenario than intentionally creating a child, knowing this child will never know the father of this child because I don't even know who he is. I picked him out of a sperm catalog. It's just getting to be a brave new world that I think is increasingly forgetting about the fact that children aren't products. They are blessings, and we don't all have rights to children any way we want to conceive them, anytime we want to conceive them. There are limits, and we need to allow the welfare of children to limit some of our desires sometimes.
Colleen Carol Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. You can read her columns at issuesetc.org. Just click on demand when you visit there tonight. issuesetc.org. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking with Dr. Albert Mohler about gay marriage, about the successes and, in some sense, the defeats when it comes to defending traditional marriage. He's president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and author of numerous books, including Desire and Deceit, The Real Cost of the New Sexual Tolerance. 10 minutes left in this hour of Issues, Etc. We'll spend it with Dr. Albert Mohler. Our kids are not our pets. It is odd, isn't it, in a culture that we value our pets so much. We call them members of the family. The pets become like the kids. But the more tragic thing is, come on, you can treat your dog like a kid. That's fine. But when we treat our children like pets, to be brought into the house at our desire, to be kept around as long as we desire them, our kids are not our pets. There's a big difference between the two. If you want a special dog, if you want the designer dog, you go out and you go to a breeder and you say, this is exactly the dog I want. I'm going to pick out this one that looks the way and acts the way I want it to be. We don't have that luxury with our children. Children are the product of our marriages, our husbands and wives, men and women. It's a whole different category there. You should never forget this. Otherwise, just put your kid on a leash. Take him to the park. We'll be right back.